Chương trình phát thanh hôm nay
This episode of Hear Hustle contains language that may not be appropriate for all listeners. Discretion is advised.
Mi nombre es Martín.
My boy Martin told me he was 15 years old when he first tried to cross the border from Mexico into the United States. His group was told two things: run as fast as you can, and if you get caught, don't tell them who the coyote is. So they take off running, and the border patrol comes out of nowhere on motorcycles and horseback, like a movie like Braveheart or something. Can you believe that shit? So they all get caught except this one guy who just keeps running for some reason. Everybody's yelling, stop, stop. And it isn't just the border patrol. Even the coyote is telling them, they got us, man, stop, stop.
Y andaba un migra atrás de él en un caballo.
This fool just keeps running, and he's jumping over bushes, and the damn border patrol on horseback is gaining on him, bush by bush.
Y el migra se soltaba unas carcajadotas y le grita, mexicana.
Eventually, the horse catches up with him and bites down on his hair hard enough to knock him down.
Y este lo tumbó al piso.
It was like some Looney Tunes shit.
Ya vámonos. Y ya nos levantaron a todos y nos subieron a la perrera y ya nos llevaron.
And that was it. He wasn't running anywhere.
That was Martin Gomez with Miguel C. Fuentes telling his story in English. We don't know what happened to the guy who got his head bitten by the horse, but we do know that the next day, Martin made it across the border.
He later got in trouble with the law, and now he's here in San Quentin. You're now tuned in to San Quentin's Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia. I'm Erline Woods. I've been incarcerated for 21 years, and I'm currently housed here at San Quentin State Prison in California.
I'm Nigel Poor, a visual artist and now podcaster. I've been working with the guys here at San Quentin for about 7 years.
And together, we're going to take you inside. Hey, Nige.
Yes, Erlon?
You didn't hear this from me, but Normal Gossip is back for a sixth season.
Oh, nice.
Join host Kelsey McKinney as she shares the juiciest gossip from the real world. Each episode, she's joined by a special guest, and you might recognize a couple this season from our Radiotopia family.
Normal Gossip, named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture. It's out now on all your favorite podcast platforms. New episodes starting April 17th. Hey, Erlon, you know I'm going to tune in because you know I love gossip.
I know.
I'm against illegal immigration. I don't consider that a racist stance. I believe strongly in citizenship. I have American citizenship. I was lucky enough to get it by birth. There's over 30 million people who have earned that right by becoming here legally and becoming citizens.
That's Wayne Boatwright. He's been on the podcast before talking about race in prison.
When it comes to the issue of immigration, he thinks American citizenship is sacred.
I think as an American, I find it sacred because I've been able to go to other countries and really appreciate what America gives us in the sense of liberty and rights and protection of the law, which may sound kind of ironic given the fact that we're doing this inside a prison.
Ironic indeed.
Erlon, immigration and crime is a hot button issue. And when an undocumented immigrant commits a serious crime, it might even end up on Trump's Twitter feed.
So I've heard.
It's outrageous.
Yeah, but that ignores the fact that immigrants, documented or undocumented, commit crimes at a lower rate than native-born Americans.
There's a fair number of guys here from other countries, and I've seen tension between races, but I've never got the feeling that there's any hostility towards immigrants. I just haven't seen it come up.
Well, it does happen in prison. All factions beef, you know, but not as much, like probably like how they do it on the street.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the news every day.
Right.
Talk about it.
So I think at the end of the day, we all have to follow the same rules in prison. It don't matter if you were born in another country. If you in prison garb, you in prison garb, you know.
So it makes me wonder, though, what is it like to be in an American prison if you're from another country? It has got to be weird.
Hey, I used to always think, like, when I see, like, a Mexican prison on TV or on the news, I used to be like, damn, what would it be like if I was in there?
I know. Do you speak Spanish?
I don't speak Spanish. I'm just, it'll be a black dude in prison, in a Mexican prison. Like,
Maybe not so good. I don't know.
They'd probably be trying to fuck me over.
You wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know what's going on.
Oh, man.
Well, that'll be one way to learn about another country.
I could definitely think of better ways to do it.
So for this episode, we talked to a couple of prisoners who were born outside the United States, and we really wanted to know, what's that like?
I came to America. I'm a songwriter and a music producer, and I came, a friend of mine was working on a Britney Spears record, and he asked me if I wanted to help him. So I came to work with him for a few weeks and just write for different artists.
But yet you've been here?
Now I'm on my 10th year in prison for a second-degree murder.
That's our very own David Jossie. He's been contributing Monster Beats to Ear Hustle since season one.
Yep, like this one.
Here I came to America to fulfill my dream, and now I'm sitting in an interview on a murder charge. It's overwhelming. It's just too shocking, you know. Being in that situation would never be anything that anybody could imagine. But when you add that you're in a different country, it adds to the fear factor. And the only thing I knew about American prisons was from movies.
The crime that Jossie's in for took place in L.A. while he was out here working on music.
He was convicted of second-degree murder for an altercation at a crosswalk that turned deadly.
It was his first encounter with the American legal system.
When I first came to jail, I thought that, man, how am I going to survive in L.A. County Jail alone? There ain't nobody from Sweden, ain't nobody from Europe, period. I don't run with nobody. You have all these different gang members. And that was a whole different world.
One day while waiting to be transported to court, Jossie was put into a holding tank that was full of gang members.
And it's tense. Everybody's serious. You got some big dudes standing there ready, like, you know, they ready to fight. And I remember this day particularly. A young guy comes in all tatted up and looking too hard for the yard. And he walks up to guys that are way bigger than him, too. And was like, where you from? Where you from? And everybody was like, I'm from so-and-so. I'm from da-da-da. And everybody answered very aggressively back. And just like the whole body movement was like, what? What you want? You want it? So he goes around the whole room. And he walks up to me and is like, where you from? And I looked him straight in the eye and say, Europe. And his eyes goes left, right, all over the globe, trying to figure out. And he go, oh, you messed me up with that one. And the whole tank starts cracking up. And we just all started laughing. And just it just broke the ice. And it was just funny because everybody knew that he was really going through, like, where is that? You know, he was geographically trying to locate Europe and see if he had beef with Europe.
Now that Jossie was in the system, he had to make a choice that we all have to make. Who are you going to run with?
So when you first get to the jail, in my case, L.A. County Jail, they put you on a long bench where everybody's sitting on a line on a long bench. And you walk up to this window, and I had no idea what he was going to ask me. And the first question I get is, what are you housed as? Black, white, other, Asian? And it's like really rapid questions. And I had never heard that before in my life.
So we've talked about this before, but we should go over it again, Erlan. Explain what he's talking about.
When you first go to prison, mm-hmm. or you first go to jail, you're asked, what are you?
What do they mean, what are you?
Like, what are you? You're black, you're white, you're Mexican.
Everybody has to answer that question.
Everybody has to answer that question.
And then you're housed by that.
Yeah, because they document it. It's just like probably on your driver's license. It says what you are.
I have to look. I don't know if it does.
What?
I just know it has my height and weight.
It's going to say white female.
Oh, my God. I got to double check that.
I think. It's only been 21 years since I've seen
In Sweden, they don't put you, what race do you belong to? I've never had that question in my whole life. So first, I was confused by the question. My mom is white. My dad is African. And he was kind of speeding me, like, come on, make up your mind. I'm just thinking fast. I'm just going black. Would not knowing what that actually meant within the prison system.
So from the get-go, he was administratively categorized as black.
I say, welcome to America. But guys knew he was from a different place.
Sort of.
Even though I was housed as black, all the blacks knew me from being from Europe. They hear me in the visiting room talking Swedish. They hear me on the phone talking Swedish.
What is talking Swedish?
Om jag pratar så här, om jag bara pratar svenska, som när jag pratar med min flickvän på telefonen, eller om jag ringer någon annan. And a lot of times I'd be on the phone talking like that, and man, you really spit that shit, huh? Yeah, you know, they couldn't really make that connection that I learned that language. No, it's my first language.
That you had that you were speaking differently. Look the same, but you're speaking differently.
And the first question I always get, I didn't know they had, do they really have black people in Sweden? You know, I had a lot of funny questions like that. I remember one guy in L.A. County Jail, he was like, you guys have hip-hop in Sweden? I said, yeah. You guys got Lil Wayne? I said, yeah. He said, so every time Lil Wayne goes there, he rap in Swedish?
It was funny then, but later he wasn't laughing about the choice he made. And we're going to hear more about that in a minute.
But first, we're going to bring in another guy with a very different American story.
What's happening?
Hey, so can you start by just telling us your name?
Yes, my name is Poon Yu.
But I know you by a different name.
Yeah, most people call me Sane, but I'm trying to transition back to my birth name.
There's nothing wrong with Sane, because that means that you're Sane.
Well, that's what I was going to ask him. Where does that name come from, Sane?
Sane is short for insane. And then I was trying to cut that out, trying to be a better person, so I came to Sane. And now I'm trying to come all the way back to my birth name, which is Poon.
Poon was born in Cambodia. He left when he was 5, but he still has a few memories of life there before his family had to flee.
He remembers his critters, like this beetle.
I would tie a string to it and allow it to fly in the air, you know what I mean? And I walk with it like it was a kite or something. But I remember me and my brothers do that quite often.
Poon's last memory of Cambodia was fleeing the Khmer Rouge. They were killing everybody who was educated. It became known as the killing fields.
We had to leave. I don't remember packing up and leaving, but I remember traveling, like on foot, with me being on my dad's back. And I didn't know until later on that we walked like for 3 days and 3 nights. And I see a bunch of other refugees too, trying to get to safety in another country. We ended up in Thailand.
Poon and his family spent about 2 years in a refugee camp in Thailand before being admitted to the United States. They were sponsored by a Mormon family and settled in Ogden, Utah.
The people I lived with was white. The food was strange. Going to church was strange. It was a culture shock.
After 4 or 5 years in Utah, there was another culture shock. His family moved to Long Beach in Southern California.
Now I got to adjust to another life. Now it's city life. Now it's gang life. Now it's fast-paced place, and the people was different.
There were blacks, there were Mexicans, and there was also a Cambodian community in Long Beach. That's why his family moved there.
Poon had a lot of brothers and sisters, and even though his parents were strict, they couldn't keep him away from the Cambodian gang.
This is around the time when he picked up that nickname, Insane.
We were new arrivals to Long Beach. Blacks and Mexicans were already there. And I don't think they liked us invading their territory. So from school, we started fighting with them. Coming home, we started fighting with them also. Oftentimes, we would often lose because we were outnumbered. So that's when, for me, the gang started. We started building our own, like, core nucleus of guys so that way we can start defending ourselves.
We hear this a lot in prison. A guy looks for acceptance, joins a gang, then there's trouble. In Poon's case, he got into a conflict with a Mexican gang and he killed somebody. He was 21 years old.
He'd never been arrested before, and he went from the streets to a maximum security level 4 prison. More culture shock.
Going to the 4-yard was really scary for me. Yeah, I look around and I see, like, men, huge men, different races, tattoos all over their faces, their bodies. And I feel like I was a little boy amongst men.
Poon faced the same choice Jazzy had to make. Which category would he belong to?
The choice is simple. Asian Pacific Islanders. That group includes anybody from Pakistan to Polynesia, Asia to the Pacific. And within that category, Poon found other Cambodians to run with.
For Jossi, it wasn't so easy. Remember, Jossi is Swedish, but he identified as Black.
So now I'm at Solano State Prison, and it's pretty far away from Los Angeles. And my girlfriend was flying in from Sweden. And I was really happy, you know, I hadn't seen her in a long time. I was really excited. And just before she came here, there was a Black guy that had a fist fight with a white guy. So all the Blacks and all the whites were on lockdown. And just because I was housed as Black, I was not allowed to go out. Now I'm on lockdown and it hits me. I realize, I'm like, wow, she really took that trip in vain. She's on a plane now, not knowing what's going on. There is no way for me to contact her. And it is just, it's devastating.
Jossi had to figure something out. He had a young son back in Sweden, and he didn't want to be on lockdown when he came to visit.
Over and over, Black kept going on lockdown. Not that Blacks were more violent, it's just that the Blacks make up a way bigger percentage in the prison population. So the chances of us going on lockdown, all the risk, I would say, are much bigger.
This was a few years ago. Now in California state prisons, lockdowns cannot be done by race.
Ooh. That shit used to suck.
Yeah, I'm surprised they could do it, actually.
Yeah, I think it was kind of, it might have been, but I'll tell you, it sucked because you'll be sitting there like, fuck, see everybody else walking by. But at the time, Jazzy was in Solano State Prison. Race lockdowns were still in play, and Jazzy was regretting his choice.
He decided he didn't want to be classified as Black anymore.
I remember going to my counselor. I said, man, there's been a misunderstanding, man. And he was like, man, I wouldn't make that transition if I was you. You know, the Blacks gonna start tripping and da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, I don't care.
He wanted to be reclassified as other.
Yep, there's a racial category in prison called other for everyone who doesn't fit in the usual categories.
Everybody else that's Black from a different country ran other. I seen all the Africans, the Jamaicans, everybody from Belize. They all ran out there. So I'm like, why am I not doing that? Why am I making it hard for myself?
Jossi got in touch with the Swedish consulate, and they gave him the paperwork he needed to change his classification.
And 3 days later, he officially became an other. So we asked him what he thought about his new label.
I felt like I was put in a situation where I had to choose something. That was their rule that they had implemented. I know who I am. I know my African roots. I know my European roots. I'm all of that. I never felt like, oh man, oh you're not, you know, you're giving up on your own race. No, it was never that for me, because I'm not confused at all of who I am. It was just a matter of, I need to do this prison time in a way that works for me.
So what do people reference you as when you make a dope ass beat? Are you a other? Are you a black? Are you just a dope ass?
They call me the Swedish phenom.
So I got this tattoo approximately 20 years ago.
Poon's tattoo is really noticeable. It covers half his neck, and it says in cursive, the killing fields.
And the killing fields represents two things. One is the history of my people and what they've been through. And it also served as an identity piece for prison, where the Asian Pacific Islander community, when they see it, they're going to acknowledge that, okay, I know who he is, where he's from, Cambodia. And having this, it's almost having this tattoo that says a killing field, it almost served me as a protection piece from other races, whites, blacks, Mexicans. When they see this, they're not going to understand that this is my culture, this is my history. They're not going to understand that. But they're going to see it as potentially a threat, somebody that they don't want to mess with.
When you see that, what do you think? On his neck, what would you think it meant?
Oh, shit, he's probably about the business, you know?
Yeah.
All right, here's one more thing about Poon we haven't told you yet. He had refugee status, but he never became a citizen. He said he never even thought about it, but now it's starting to weigh on him.
When you come to prison, being a citizen doesn't matter. People don't care. That's the last thing on their mind.
So why is it starting to matter now?
It's starting to matter because I want to leave prison and return to the community that I harmed and make amends. So when I get out because I'm not a citizen, there's a strong possibility that I'll get deported.
I mean, I would hate to have been in a refugee camp as a young child and have a chance to come to America and then be at risk of being deported after I had served whatever sentence I had to serve. But I'm not at all bothered by that. It goes back to this concept of the sacredness of citizenship.
This is Wayne Boatwright again. He's obviously thought a lot about this issue.
And we don't agree with him, but just like on the outside, there's a huge range of opinion here.
If they had been here since they were 1 year old, they had every opportunity to become a citizen. Either their parents or they never learned how to do that. So they never finalized their citizenship status. They were just residents. And under our current law, if you're a resident and you commit a felony and not a citizen, we can deport you. And I'm fine with that. I mean, I'm not saying it's good for them, but it doesn't bother me because I consider citizenship sacred.
So where would you get deported to?
I'll probably go back to Cambodia, probably Battambang. I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, I wonder about that.
So you were 4 years old when you left Cambodia.
Yeah.
And how old are you now?
I'm 42, turning 43.
Okay, so let's say you get out when you're 44,
mm-hmm.
Let's just say. What would be waiting for you in Cambodia?
A whole lot of nothing. Because family members that I left behind, I don't know them. I don't know if me being a grown man could knock on their door and say, hey, I'm your family, could you receive me?
Do you speak Cambodian still?
I speak Cambodian, but I can't hold a long conversation. I don't read or write either, so that's gonna be tough. Just walking to a strange land again, brand new, I'm gonna need somebody. others to walk alongside me or somebody, and I don't have that. That's a scary feeling.
We asked Poon, what's going to happen to him? How can he find out?
How do I find out? I have to rely on those that came before me, meaning the guys that's already deported or the guys who made it free and made it to the streets in America, you know?
I was raised in a refugee camp until I was like 4.5 years old. And then after that, we immigrated to the United States in around 1985.
Okay. And how old were you when you got here?
I was 4.5, turning 5.
This is Bori I, or PJ as he's known here. PJ's story is like Poon's. His family left Cambodia to escape the killing fields. But unlike Poon, PJ never stepped foot in Cambodia. He was born in Thailand, in that refugee camp.
In the U.S., PJ got involved with gangs. When he was 14, he killed someone during a robbery. When he was 15, he was tried as an adult and sentenced to 25 years to life.
And like Poon, he wasn't a citizen. No. His family got citizenship, but he couldn't because he was in prison. PJ served 20 years, and in November 2016, he was found suitable by the parole board.
That's right, he's out of prison. And I had to go to Oakland to meet with him. His story is so similar to Poon's.
Sure is.
And I wanted to find out what happened to him when he got out of San Quentin. And maybe that would give us some sense of what Poon might be facing.
PJ was ready. He had his parole plans all worked out, a job, a place to stay, even a new outfit, a gray shirt with two pockets, blue Levi's, and Timberland boots.
They're pretty heavy, actually.
They are heavy.
They're really heavy, but comfortable.
And then how did it feel when you got, when you put those clothes on?
It felt great. It felt odd, right? It felt like knowing, like, this is my last day in prison, knowing that this is different, right? You feel different, but then the clothes, like, substantiate that I'm no longer in blue, right? I'm no longer in, like a blue shirt, you know, prison outfit. Yeah.
About a month before his date, his counselor told PJ that ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, might be there waiting for him. But he didn't know for sure, and he put it out of his mind. But the day of his release, when he was sitting in San Quentin's holding tank, he learned that ICE was going to pick him up.
As I walk out the tank, there's two ICE officers waiting. You know, I mean, they had handcuffs and everything. They told me, just leave my property there, they pick it up. You can't take off my shoes, the Timberland shoes. I had to take that out because they can't have shoelaces. Took my belt out, because right, you can't have a belt either. So I took my belt out, and then they shackled me right from head to toe.
And then the ICE officers put him in a van.
It was like a dog cage, man, we call it, in the van, because it's all metal concrete. Like, it's metal. All the way around, it's a metal bench. And so they put me in there, and I sat on this metal seat, and they drove me to San Francisco.
In San Francisco, he was processed in an ICE field office, then sent to Sacramento in that same van.
He was shackled again, so he couldn't get the seatbelt on.
So then I'm sliding, and then I remember, like, when he stopped, and I hit my head in the cages, like, and I think I cut myself. And that moment, like, I woke up. Like, I mean, you know, I'm back in prison again.
PJ was sent to a county jail in Sacramento that was serving as an ICE detention facility.
I think they're just like a camp. I don't think it's like a prison. I think that they have extra rights and privileges in there. They have a good meal. They're taken care of. They're kept safe. They're not allowed to leave it. They go to school. They go to exercises. They do stuff in these detention centers. Obviously, I've never been to one. I have no idea what it is.
I walk into a dorm. It's like, it's shocking. The people are running everywhere, surrounded by people from all different cultural, people who's never been in prison before, people who's off the street, who detoxing from drugs. And I walk in there, and it's like noisy. This is like 12 o'clock at night. And it's like people are banging on tables, people yelling and screaming, the TV's on really loud. And it's like, it was overwhelming. It was a lot. And then I looked around, it's like the bunks are everywhere, right? And it's small space. And then, like, they gave me this mattress that's right off the yard, But like I remember looking at the mattresses, like bugs crawling all over it. It's so nasty. And then they don't give you any type of disinfectant to clean it, nothing. Just give it to you. Throw 3 wool blankets. Here, deal with it. Go in the pot. And that was it. When I was in the county jail, I didn't go anywhere for 1.5 years. I was in a pod. I walked 20 feet a day. I was sitting on my bed most of the time. So my muscle was falling asleep, right? And my joint and everything was falling asleep because I wasn't used to walking.
PJ spent a total of 19 months in ICE detention. He was waiting to be deported. And we can't say back to Cambodia because he's never been there.
But that's where the U.S. government wants to send him. The problem is the Cambodian government hasn't provided the necessary paperwork, so ICE released him from detention.
So I'm under order supervision right now, under ankle monitor. At any time Cambodia changed their mind and issued documents, ICE will come and detain me again, and then they'll deport me. So I've been out for 3 months, and so I'm living in San Francisco, you know, I'm living in limbo. I'm waiting to see what's going to happen next.
But how can it end? What needs to happen to let you stay here?
Right now, if the governor will give me a pardon for my crime, for my past crime, that would take it.
Is that the only thing?
That's the only thing.
And how likely is that?
It's up to the governor.
If you did get deported, what's waiting for you in Cambodia?
Nothing.
My release date will be September 25th. In 32 days, I'll be gone.
Marco Villa has been in the United States for 32 years and in a California prison for 10 and a half. He's not a citizen.
When he's released, he faces another one of those stark choices that prisoners have to make.
And what's going to happen when you walk out that gate?
Well, I'm going to be asked by the immigration if I want to file my case, file my papers, because I had a social security number and a green card, and I had it for 20 years. But what I know, as far as I know, is about 5% possibilities for me to win my case. So they're going to ask me if I want to sign my deportation, and that's most likely what I'm going to do. Because if I file my case, it will take like 2 years or more, and I'm going to have to be in a immigration facility and end up getting deported anyways. I mean, with a 5% chance to stay in here, I think it's not worth it to take that risk.
Marco has heard what it's like in those deportation facilities. And Erlan, we keep hearing the conditions in them are deliberately harsh so that undocumented immigrants won't stay there and fight their cases.
If that's so, it worked on Marco.
If you knew when you got out you were going to be deported back to Cambodia, mm-hmm. would you rather stay in prison or would you rather get out and go back to Cambodia?
This thought crossed my mind a lot. After 20 plus 23 so far, I don't want to sit in immigration, be detained further. I want to be free. Yeah, I want to be free. So I don't know if I want to challenge the policy or not. At the same time, I do, because this is all I know. I'm not an American on paper. But I still feel like an American.
So Poon's probably going to fight deportation to Cambodia. He really doesn't know what his chances are. And it's going to be tough for him to stay.
Same for the Swedish phenom. Jossie came over for work, and he doesn't have U.S. citizenship either.
So when you get out, what are you expecting? What's waiting for you when you get out?
Well, first thing is, my son and I always say that the first thing I'm gonna do is I'm gonna fly to Sweden, see my son, and I always tell him that the day after we're gonna fly to Gambia to see my dad. It bothers me a lot because I have a lot of guilt for getting into this situation and to have him growing up without me.
On the brighter side, Jossie has a familiar country to go back to. He has family there, and he speaks the language.
So it's probably going to be easier for him to make his parole plans, where to live, where to work, and all of that. But if you're facing deportation back to a country where there's nothing waiting for you, how do you plan for that?
I guess you don't. But this is when it finally matters in prison, if you're a citizen or not, the day you get out.
Thanks to David Jossie, Poon Yu, PJ Borey, and Marco Villa for talking to us about their hopes and fears.
And don't forget about Miguel C. Fuentes, who translated Martin Gomez's story at the top of the episode.
And thanks to Wayne Boatwright for sharing his thoughts with us.
And shout out to Snap Judgment for letting us record PJ in their Oakland studio. When we come back, we'll have a count time for you. That's when we play a little something extra we want you to hear.
Dear son, I hope this letter reaches you in good health. I spilled some ink upon this paper just to see if you're well. I know you're going through the motions because I'm trapped in a cell. But stay strong and get that education under your belt. I know it's hard to crack a smile when you're going through hell. And no one truly feels the pain but God and yourself. But when you stare into the mirror, know them tears don't lie. Remember, ink is graded later.
Sometimes when I walk down into the yard, I hear these guys and I can't see where it's coming from. It just gives me the biggest smile every time.
Hey, so when I recorded them, I was afraid that I was just bouncing up and down. My head was down. But that's the three guitars. We've been trying to get them recorded forever. And the last time, if you remember, I forgot to push the record button.
Oh, I remember. But this time you redeemed yourself.
I redeemed myself. I did good. That's Jose, Vicente, and Jerry, the three guitarists.
Ear Hustle is produced by myself, Nigel Poor.
And me, Erline Woods.
With help from outside producer Pat Macedi Miller, who also comes in to work with our sound design team. This episode was scored with music by David Jossie and Antoine Williams.
Curtis Fox is our story editor, Aaron Wade's our digital producer, and Julie Shapiro is our executive producer for Radiotopia. We want to thank Warden Ron Davis, and as you know, every episode has to be approved by this guy here.
This is Lieutenant Sam Robinson at San Quentin State Prison, and I think this story demonstrates that just as divergent the views are outside the walls of the prison, they are inside the prison. And so, as I always do, I approve the story.
Next time on Ear Hustle, the history of San Quentin, partially based on the book by Warden Clinton T. Duffy,
written in 1950.
I had known since my boyhood that one of the principal causes of bitterness among imprisoned men is that invisible barrier, much more impregnable than a mere concrete wall, between them and the outside world.
Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a collection of the best podcasts around. Hear more at radiotopia.fm.
This is Ali Tambora, who used to be a resident here at San Quentin State Prison. I now work for the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. This podcast was made possible with support from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, working to redesign the justice system by building power and opportunity for communities impacted by incarceration.
I'm Nigel Poor.
And I'm Earlonne Woods. Thanks for ear hustling. Nige, Ear Hustle listeners are the best.
They really are. You're always in touch, letting us know what you think about episodes and sharing the love.
Yep, it's really a two-way conversation, a relationship.
Indeed it is. And if you're looking for a way to deepen that relationship, consider signing up for Ear Hustle Plus.
Ear Hustle Plus, it's a new subscription service that delivers bonus Ear Hustle episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
In addition to ad-free episodes of Ear Hustle, subscribers get behind-the-scenes, off-the-cuff conversations.
We have a monthly AMA, which is Ask Me Anything episode, where you and I answer questions sent in by subscribers.
And seriously, no question is too random or wacky.
Questions like, what's our favorite book? Do we hang out in between seasons? What's the most technically challenging Ear Hustle episode ever?
Okay, Earlonne, yeah, those are good questions, but like we said above, I'd like some wackier ones, actually.
We've also started doing episode commentary, where you and I listen to a classic Ear Hustle episode and talk about how it came together, hard decisions made along the way, and where the people in the episodes are now.
Yeah, we did that for Sellies, and it was a lot of fun, so we're definitely going to do more. And Earlonne, tell them about that idea you're working on.
Sure. I've been sitting down with some of our formerly incarcerated friends who have gotten out and are doing well. Just basically showing how they went from one situation to a better situation, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Those will start dropping in the Ear Hustle Plus feed soon.
Listeners, we want you in this conversation. Find out more about Ear Hustle Plus at earhustlesq.com/plus or subscribe right now in the Apple Podcast Player app.
That's earhustlesq.com/plus or right in the Apple Podcast Player.
So, what is your favorite book, Earlonne?
Sorry, Nige. You got to subscribe for that.
Really?
Yes.
Radiotopia.